This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 taxpaying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Tacticam. This is your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State. I am your host, Josh Raley, and I hope you are as fired up as I am today. Man, it is middle of August here. It is my daughter's birthday today, actually. My youngest daughter just turned 5, and one, I'm fired up about that. We got to celebrate her today. Got a big old Chick-fil-A cup sitting here next to me from our birthday dinner with her. That was her food of choice. Of course, a 5-year-old wants chicken nuggets for her birthday dinner. But I am also fired up because deer season is like a month away, and I cannot wait. I'm going to be in the woods probably the weekend of September 9th, 10th, somewhere in there, here in Georgia for the opener. It's probably going to be miserable, but it's opening day. So what do? It's kind of just one of those things. You got to get out. You got to get in the woods. You got to knock the rust off a little bit, right? Got to make sure, got to figure out what all I lost from last year, what all I need to buy again, what all I need to change up, what all gear was broken or not working or whatever was frustrating me last year. I've certainly forgot about it now as I look at this season that's upcoming through rose-colored glasses. But we are drawing ever closer to my absolute favorite time of the year, and I cannot wait. And along those lines, I have my buddy Dan Johnson from the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast and the Hunting Gear podcast. You might know him as the Emperor of the Sportsman's Empire podcast network. He keeps all of us rascals corralled together and pulling in the same direction when it comes to our podcasts and all of our content. Dan was on the show, and I wanted to have him on to talk about gear. Dan's a guy, he's been in the hunting industry for like 17 years at this point. He has talked to a lot of people in that time. He has worked with a lot of brands in that time. He has bought a lot of gear during that time. And he probably has more hunting gear than almost anybody else that I know. So I wanted to get Dan on and talk about his gear for the upcoming season, not only for the Whitetail Woods, which he's obviously going to be hunting there in Iowa during the rut this year, but he also likes to head west earlier in the season. So I wanted to pick his brain a little bit about some of the most important pieces of gear for him when it comes to hunting out west. No surprise, we spend some time talking about boots, we talk about packs, we talk about glass, we talk about the value of good base layers, just an all-around good gear conversation. Like if you're thinking about gear at this time of year, you're thinking about what should I buy, what should I try out, what should I maybe scrap from previous years because I'm just not happy with it. This is going to be a good show for you, so I hope you stick around and enjoy the show. Get ready to share your hunt this season with the Tacticam Solo Extreme Point of View Camera. Featuring one-touch operation, weatherproof housing, and mounts to fit any style of hunting, the Solo Extreme is sure to make filming your hunts foolproof and hassle-free. The Solo Extreme features up to 8x zoom, image stabilization technology that takes the shock out of the shot, and lets you capture crystal clear, wide quad HD 60 frame per second footage. And you get all of this in a compact camera that weighs under 13 ounces. From now until August 31st, you can get the Solo Extreme and a stabilizer mount for just $149.99, and of course you get free shipping with that. To learn more or pick up your Solo Extreme today, head over to tacticam.com. Onyx Hunt is always striving to help make hunters more successful in the field each season. Onyx has just released a bunch of new features to help you on your next hunt. These features include new aerial imagery options like leaf off, recent imagery updated every 2 weeks with historic look back, and imagery on demand. On top of that, Onyx is reinventing the trail camera market by syncing your hunt app with multiple cell camera manufacturers and helping organize and analyze your photos right there in the app. You can try Onyx Hunt free for 7 days or go to onyxmaps.com to learn more. Hunt in comfort this season with camo from Huntworth. They make high-quality technical camo at a fraction of the price of other brands. My personal favorites for the early season include the Durham lightweight pants, which are rugged and durable with just the right amount of stretch where it counts, and the Shelton midweight quarter-zip hoodie with built-in face mask. To make building out your kit simpler, their website now features their new System Builder. This tool will help you grab the right camo no matter what season or species you're hunting. And right now, you can get 30% off with their preseason sale. Just use the code PRE30, that's capital P, capital R, capital E, and the number 30 at huntworthgear.com. All right, joining me for this week's episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast once again is my brother, Mr. Dan Johnson. Dan, welcome back.
Hey, man. Good to talk with you again, man.
You too, buddy. How's your summer been rocking so far?
Full bore, like nonstop. I'll be honest, I'm ready for the kids to go back to school in a major way.
Yeah.
Like I feel like in the summertime, my productivity is down. My patience level is down. Like school is such an amazing thing because I can focus 100% on work, get all of it done. By the time they get off the bus, I can be super dad the rest of the night. But now with the kids home, it is stop and start. And then make sure the kids, you know, I got to feed them lunch and I got to, you know, hey, can I go over to Joe, you know, Billy Joe's house? And I got to take him over somewhere and I'm a chauffeur and all that stuff. And so I'm ready for school to start.
Yeah, man, I love having my kids at home. I love summertime. Yeah. Really dig it. Yeah. The whole issue of trying to work from home with kids, I feel like I get more done in 4 hours without them here than I do in 8 or 10 hours with them here because of that stop and start and all the fragmentation. So, man, summer times are usually pretty busy for you. And I know one of the things that you focus a lot on, at least you did last year, was banking those brownie points for your fall, man. So how's the brownie point bank looking? We looking pretty strong or you a little low there?
Well, you always hope it. You're looking strong in the brownie point area. Like I, dude, you know, you never really know if you're doing it right or not. Right. Because it takes just one bad day to have everything come crashing down. But for the most part, you know, we've done vacations, I've done house projects, you know, I've taken care of the kids, you know, and all that stuff. And so I hope it's enough. If it's not enough, well, tough shit, I guess. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, Dan, I thought what we could talk about today, we're heading into the season. We're sitting here, you know, about the middle of August. And you host a show on our network called the Hunting Gear Podcast. Not only do you host the Hunting Gear Podcast, but you've also just been in the game for a long time. Like, when did you first start dipping your toe in the outdoor industry?
2006, I believe it was, when I was first introduced to it and started working in it.
Okay, so we're talking a 17-year stretch at this point.
Jesus.
did I just rock your world a little bit? Sorry.
That's crazy. Yeah, that it's been that long. I mean, now that you say it, it just makes it seem, I don't know, man, that's crazy. That's a long time.
Dude, you have people who have gone from not being a twinkle in their dad's eye yet to fully functional hunting on their own on public land bow hunters. Exactly. In the time that you have been, you've got grown men who are younger than your outdoor career at this point. So, man, that's pretty good. But you know, part of that is, you know, with the Hunting Gear Podcast, you get to talk to a lot of different people, but also a lot of different companies. So you kind of get both sides. You get the end user, which is going to give you one picture, and then you get the companies, which, you know, they're going to give you the marketing picture for better or worse. It's just the way the industry works, right? It's the way every industry works. But you also have just an absolute pile of stuff. Like I've heard you say before, like, I can't hold any more hunting gear. Like I just can't, I can't take any more. I'm tapped out without getting rid of some stuff. So, I thought we'd just kick off a conversation heading into this early season to talk about gear, but as context for the kind of gear that maybe you're going to be using and focusing on this year, I want to get a quick overview of what your season is going to look like, because I think you're probably doing a couple things that maybe the average dude isn't going to be getting out to do.
Yeah. You know, obviously every environment calls for different gear and equipment. Whether you're elk hunting or whether you're sitting in a tree stand, you know, and even if you're sitting in a tree stand or a saddle in Maine versus Florida, or the South versus, you know, the warm South versus the cool North. I mean, it's all like, especially clothing, or clothing and boots and things like that. It's all gonna be based off the environment that you're in. So, you know, I go out west every year. I've started to go in this third week in October to go try to chase mule deer out west in the Great Plains somewhere. And I really love that time of year. It can be anywhere from 29. I think the one year I went, it was like 29 degrees at night. And then during the day, it got like a couple days, it got a high of 60. And then a couple days, it got like to a high of 90. Jeez. And so it can really swing either way out there. It's always windy. So you got to be prepared for that. I have, knock on wood, I haven't ran into too much rain. But, you know, the gear that I'm using out west, there are some specifics that I change out, but there's also some that I really like in both the western environment and the whitetail in a tree hunting environment as well. So there's crossover.
Right, right. And you're kind of one of the things I appreciate about you is you're kind of a no-nonsense dude. And you're not, and I may be wrong on this, but my impression of you has been that you're not just a tinkerer for no reason. You're not just going to like try to get the newest gadget and be like running through all the newest gear just because it was new for that year kind of thing. So I trust your methods to be pretty tried and true. When you're heading out west, what are some of those like essential pieces that, maybe you've acquired just in the last couple of years, or maybe some things that you've got your eye on for this year?
Yeah, when it comes to the West, I'll tell you right now, hunting in general, for me, the number one product that a guy has to have dialed in is his boots. And I'll go a step further and I will say his sock boot combo. Because if you're just wearing a pair of cotton socks on a hot hike, your feet are going to get wet, and then you're going to generate blisters, or, you know, you're just going to be uncomfortable. And so for me, it's all about a really good boot and a really good sock. And when you're not thinking about your feet, then you're thinking about deer hunting. Or you're not thinking about how hot or cold you are, and you're somewhat comfortable. You really can focus on the hunting, and that's why we all do it. But I would say that out West, compared to, let's just use packs, for example, in my opinion, a pack out West carries way more weight, literally and figuratively, than a whitetail pack.
Right.
You're usually, I'm not saying this for everybody, but usually you're not going to quarter up your whitetail on the east side of the country and pack it out. You usually drag it out, or you and your buddy take a four wheeler or whatever the case may be. I would say that's typical. Do people quarter out and basically do a Western style pack out for whitetails on the east side of the country? Of course they do. But out West, you're carrying water, a lot more water. I find myself carrying a lot more water. It's necessary, especially if you're going to be moving around all day. And so the boots are important. The socks are important. The combination of that. And then the pack out West, and then just binoculars, like a really good pair of optics. I would say those are the three things that I would say are make or break products, that the gear would actually influence how the hunt goes.
Right. Right. I want to touch on that boot piece there, because, as a whitetail guy, I have, you know, obviously I'm not hiking in 10 miles for elk. Right.
Right.
One thing, though, that I've decided is that rubber boots suck, and I hate them real bad for the most part, right? But here's the thing. I would rather whine about my boots every year than buy a good pair of boots. That's just kind of where I've been. So talk me through, like, what are some of your go-tos when you're going out West? Because I'm sure, you know, there's going to be some carryover into the whitetail world if you're not, you know, slogging through knee-deep water.
Yeah, I mean, rubber boots obviously have their place,
sure.
Right? I mean, for wet conditions, if you're a guy who hunts a lot of marshes or swamps, the rubber boots are probably a necessity in the South. You're from Georgia,
right?
Right. It can be wet. It can be slimy. Whenever I have to cross, a marsh or a swamp or a creek crossing, you know, I plan accordingly. But usually I'm trying to find a way to my tree stands without having to get my feet wet. And luckily in Iowa, the places that I hunt don't require that. Out West, a pair of rubber boots and the amount of miles that I put on in a single day it's not an option.
Right.
Rubber boots out West, it's just not an option. They are, you know, I'm sure there's brands out there that are comfortable and could be hiked in, but they, you know, not only do rubber boots keep moisture out, they also keep moisture in. So by the end of the day, you're basically putting your feet in a sauna and your feet are going to get wet. I don't care what type of sock you have. They're going to get wet. You're going to get hot. You're going to get uncomfortable. And it's not, for me, it's not an option.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you wearing as far as boots? Do you have a pair that you're willing to say this is a good brand, or a good line people should check out?
Yeah, so I currently have a pair of Crispy Thors, and those I've had for 5 years now. I think I'm actually going to go finally buy a new pair. they've like for after 5 years, they've kind of lost their a little bit of their waterproofing. They're broke in perfect. The insoles, I could probably replace the insoles and get away with a couple more years out of them, to be honest. But they've every year I power wash them, I let them dry, and then I apply another coating of waterproofing spray to them. And, but I think they've finally reached their limit and it's time to buy a new pair. So, but I really like the Crispies because I've never had a blister in them. Wow. I've never, they fit really well, to my style, like my feet. I've had, man, it's almost like they come broken in a way to where you, I think, and that's what they, one thing they're known for is being hunt ready without having to really break them in, hunt or hike ready without having to break them in. So that's another reason I really like them, but they've just performed to, you know, I'm sure there's other boots out there that do the same thing, but for me, they've performed. They're at an okay price point for what I'm looking for. I think I bought mine for like $350-ish or $320 or something like that.
Okay.
And so some may say that's a little on the higher end, but I've had them for 5 years and I've never had a blister out of them. So that's worth something.
Yeah, man, I think that, you know, one, they haven't given you a headache. So, you know, haven't given you blisters or had any issues out of them. But when you're talking $70 a year, like you, dude, I spend that on cheap rubber boots around here. So that's pretty good. What about socks? Like I have gotten to where I do all uninsulated boots, even hunting in Wisconsin when it's cold out, because either rubber, my feet are just hot all the time. Anyway, I don't struggle with cold feet unless my feet get wet. So I just moved totally away from insulated boots and have just relied heavily on socks these last couple of years. I'm either, you know, I'm going to either have a lightweight sock on or try to boost that up a little bit. Do you have a specific kind? Because I've tried some wool, I've tried some synthetic, and I think I've landed where I like it, but do you have any other recommendations?
Yeah, I would say wool, obviously. We have Darn Tough socks. We have, there's actually a company name that has the word wool in it. It's a hiking sock.
Oh, is that
it's marketed.
It's like Merewool or something like that?
Smart wool.
Smart wool. Okay. All right.
Yep. Smart wool works. And then there, and those would be my, like Darn Tough. I'll just say Darn Tough is my mid and lightweight sock option. But now they just came out with a couple new, dude, there's a brand called Alterra, spelled like this, Altera. Alterra, they are an alpaca sock. And alpaca actually performs better than wool does. And so usually they in the past, they've made a thicker sock. And so that is my go-to rut, you know, late October, the rut. It's a heavier sock. I put it in my Crispy boot and just, man, very comfortable, very functional. And so that is, so it's when it's warm, it's usually a Darn Tough. But now Alterra makes thinner, lighter weight socks as well. So I think I'm just going to be rocking Alterra from here on out, unless something else comes along. But cold weather is one of the thicker sock options. And then if it's really cold, then I'll put my feet in a Arctic Shield boot cover. And so I'm actually putting that layer on in the tree stand, and that keeps my feet nice and toasty throughout an entire day.
Right. Was that you that I've talked to before about the Arctic Shield covers where you're like, dude, I've got a set from forever ago that I can't, like, I don't even know if they make this kind anymore.
I don't think that was me. I think I bought mine 5 years ago.
Okay.
I've kind of permanently ditched the rubber boots about 5 years ago and just strictly went to the hiking boot with the boot covers. The cool thing about that is that, you know, I'm just more sure footed in a pair of hiking boots, as opposed to like, you know, a lot of guys wear the Alpha Burley Pros from lacrosse. Just a huge boot. I mean, a giant boot with a ton of insulation. And if you're a mobile hunter and you're trying to climb up a tree stand with like four inch steps or something like that, man, it's not easy to do, especially if you're trying to sit there in a saddle, or if you're trying to, a small platformed tree stand. It's just, I don't know. It's just not for me.
Yeah, man, that's where I've landed too. Like, even in situations where my feet might get just a little bit wet on the way in, those hikers just change everything, especially like you're saying, if you're mobile and you're going to be standing on your platform, on your saddle platform, let's say, for hours on end, God, the freaking rubber boots just make it miserable. I'd rather get up there and take my boots off, than have to rock the rubber boots all day. I want to switch over to talking about glass, because I'm sure your glass is different when you're hunting out west and you're hunting out east, or when you're back home in Iowa. I think glass is, I don't know, I think there's a segment of people who are just like, I never use it for whitetails. I just don't even worry about it because I don't need it. And then there's a segment that like glasses every little flicker that they see in the whitetail woods. But I know you're a big fan of your Vortex glass. So let's talk about maybe what you're using out west as compared to what you're going to use on a typical rut hunt in Iowa.
So out west, I use something a little bit different out west than I do in the whitetail woods. But like, I'll just start with like spotting scopes. Out west, when I elk hunt, I don't bring a spotter because I usually am hunting dark timber, and I'll shoot any elk that walks by. So I'm not necessarily looking, needing to glass up an elk and count his points and see what his score is. So that doesn't matter to me. Now, you change that to the Western Plains, where there's way less trees and you can see forever, then I bring a spotting scope. And that allows me to look basically a long distance, say, is there a buck in the mix of these deer? And then that tells me whether I need to go in, go chase them or not. If it's just a whole bunch of does, then I don't want to go chase them. I'm looking for, I'm looking for some kind of buck. And then I'm also bringing a pair of binoculars that has a little bit more magnification than I would in the whitetail woods. And so typically my whitetail setup is I very rarely am in an area that I am going to just be glassing all day. For me, when I'm in the whitetail, when I'm in it hanging in a tree, I'm basically just looking at movement that I've seen with my own eyes. Right. So I'm not just sitting there glassing all day long. I'm glassing at movement. So if I see something, I'm like, okay, what is that? What is that thing? And so, that's one of that. And so like, this, I think my Vortex binoculars, I want to say I have a Razor HD for the West, and then I have the new Triumph HD for the whitetail woods. And then I have a Razor spotting scope, a Razor HD spotting scope as well for the West.
Right. Right. I think one thing that, and I did it this year with my Vortex binos. I grabbed a Diamondback spotting scope this year, for turkey hunting. Cause I do a lot of big ag country kind of glassing and stuff for turkey scouting. But one thing I was kind of blown away by, because I've never tried it before, is it just a set of binos on a tripod.
Like, oh yeah.
You throw a set of binos on a tripod, it changes everything.
Yeah.
If you're trying to I have
never done that, but whenever I do glass with my binos, especially out west, I'm laying back and I got my elbows in tight, and I'm in a really tight position to where there's not a lot, like I'm using myself as the tripod.
Right.
I hear a lot of guys, I've heard a lot of guys talk about how binos on a tripod are great, but it's just one of those things where even if you have a quick connect it still is an extra thing you have to do to put your spotting scope on and then take your spotting scope off and put the binos on or something like that. So usually if I'm rocking a spotting scope, I just leave it attached right to the tripod, and that's how I do it.
Yeah, rocking that. All right, let's switch over to the whitetail world then. You're heading out. When are you heading west this year? Is it going to be that second week of October again?
Second or third week. I don't have it 100% scheduled. I'm basically just going to go when I feel the weather's the best.
All right. And that's going to be your annual muley hunt turn whitetail hunt. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, muley / whitetail hunt. Yep, for sure.
Okay. All right. So when you're back home then in the whitetail woods, your hunting is primarily focused around the rut. I mean, you're a family guy. You know, I have found myself in the last couple of years, our kids are getting older, 9, 7, and 5 now. And I just have less times to make strikes in the woods. So I have almost, not totally, but I have almost abandoned the early season game. And it's just a time thing, right? Like I can stack my time at home then, and then I can take 2 weeks in November when I am all whitetail focused. I don't have any responsibilities at home, and I'm really, really, really dialed in, right? And that's when most of your hunting is focused as well, as those first 2 weeks of November. So there's a specific time frame there that we're thinking about when it comes to weather and temperatures and conditions, but it can also be super variable. What are some of the top, I guess, gear pieces that maybe you're trying out this year that are going to either make you more effective, or maybe ones that are just tried and true that are just your standbys for your yearly whitetail hunts?
Yeah, man. So anything like merino base layers. Okay. I mean, so my merino base layers, and I have a variety of them. It's not just one brand specifically. My merino base layers are the foundation of my layering system, period. And that, and so that can translate over to my socks as well. Right. And so really the base layer is the starting point. And then from there, is it hot outside? Then I'll wear these pants. Is it cold outside? Then I'll wear these pants, or this layering option. And so usually, you know, if I'm going to go out east, you know, if I'm here in Iowa, or if I'm going to, let's say, Wisconsin or Minnesota, and it's cold that time of year, then I'm going to be really like walking to the tree in just my base layers, climb up and, you know, climb up in the tree. And if I'm dripping sweat, that I know that merino wool is going to, you know, do its job and dry me off fairly quickly.
Right.
You know, in the past, man, I don't understand why it took me so long. And maybe it was because I didn't have any experience in the West. I feel like Western hunters, backpackers, hikers, they were keen to the merino game long before the whitetail hunters were.
Right.
And so, but you know, the functionality is there for the whitetail hunter. I mean, I don't know how many times I've ended up sweating my balls off walking to the tree stand in like, you know, 25, 30 degree weather, and then just being soaking wet and cold all the rest of the hunt, because I was in cotton or a cotton hooded sweatshirt, or I tried to walk to the stand with too much clothing on. And, you know, and now I basically get dressed at the bottom of the tree stand and let the merino do its job.
Just want to take a quick minute to let you know that the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast is brought to you by Tacticam, makers of the best point-of-view cameras on the market for hunters and anglers. They're on the cutting edge making user-friendly cameras to help the everyday outdoorsman share your hunt with friends and loved ones. Their new 6.0 camera has a ton of upgraded features this year, but the one I'm most excited about is the new LCD touchscreen. In my mind, that is a total game changer. And one area Tacticam really shines is with their mounts and adapters that are made with the sportsman in mind. If you've tried to film your hunting and fishing excursions, you know just how frustrating it can be to try to get an action camera aimed just right, or get it attached to your weapon or in a good spot for a second angle. Well, Tacticam makes all of that a breeze with their line of mounts and adapters. This fall, I'm going to be using their stabilizer mount on my bow with the 6.0 camera, and their bendy clamp paired with the 5.0 wide camera for a second angle and to make sure I don't miss any of the action. To learn more and check out their full line of products, head over to their website, tacticam.com, and share your hunt with Tacticam.
How are you keeping, like,
because I've switched over. So I've used Merino for a number of years. Last year, I switched over to a synthetic base layer system from Huntworth, and it performed basically as well as Merino. I think, you know, as far as keeping me warm, drying out quickly, that kind of thing. The one issue that I have run into, because I'm like you, I'm trying to get dressed at the base of the tree. I might have a 2 mile, mile and three quarter kind of hike in to some of these public land spots, because I love spots where no bikes are allowed, no cars are allowed. You're walking in from the access. That's all you can do. I feel like it's easier to get away from the pressure that way when I focus on those areas. So I'm getting dressed there, but man, I get there and my base layers a lot of times are just covered in junk. Like, have you found a solution for this yet? Or am I just destined to continue to have to get back in the evenings and pick stuff out of my camo?
Yeah, they have products for that. It's like a glove that you put on and you can wipe down all that, and it's supposed to transfer that to the glove, and then you can rinse it out or whatever the case may be. But for me, I know that if I'm going into certain spots, walking through CRP fields, and usually those cockabers and that bagger's lice, that's all on like the edge of timber and CRP or timber and field or grass or whatever. And so I try to avoid those places, but ultimately you got to go to where the best access route is. And so for me, I'm wearing like denim. I'm wearing some kind of Dickie or some kind of Carhartt pants, you know, or you know what I mean? It's not those brands specifically, but that type of material. And that picks up way less thorns, and it's durable. I mean, you walk into a thorn bush and it, you know, it just breaks the thorn. It doesn't make it in through the pants. Some of the stuff that I, there's one brand in specifically that I wear a lot. It's called Arborware. Okay. And it's made for arborist. It's a brand that's marketed, but it's that thick material. And so I use that to avoid the pickup. And then usually it's from, you know, it's from the waist down if I do pick it up. And that material, all you got to do is just like do this a couple times and it just kind of rolls off the pants. It's not perfect, but it's better than, you know, let's say like a fleece. Yeah, per se.
Right. Exactly. And I've been thinking about just grabbing, you know, some kind of material like that. That's, you know, a non-insulated piece that I just wear kind of as an outer layer on the way in. I can get to my stand, take it off, and then layer up, you know, with my camo or whatever after that. But just to avoid some of the issues, because I've had it before where, you know, my arms have beggar's lice is the big one for me, especially hunting in Wisconsin. You get just covered in the stuff. Then you want to put your layers on, and now it's all inside of whatever. And a lot of the stuff that I like to wear is like lined with Sherpa fleece or a grid fleece. So Sherpa fleece or a grid fleece. And dude, once it's in there, like
game over.
I mean, it changes your comfort level for the entire day, because it just that stuff will just sit in there and poke you and be miserable.
Yeah, man, I bought a pair of. And this is ultimately where I learned my lesson of what I need versus, you know, what I want versus what I actually need. I spent the money. I bought a pair of Sitka fleece pants and a matching top, or it was a matching vest. I can't remember. Either way, I spent Sitka money, and those pants haven't been touched in 3 years. I think I cleaned them up and sold them like for dirt cheap, because they are, they're great in the stand, but getting to the stand and leaving the stand are ultimately what is the most important, right? Because you can spend all day in a stand, but if you're taking a weak access route, then it doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
And so that's ultimately where I was like, Jesus, man, I just spent this much money on a pair of pants that I'm not even using anymore. And so that's where I kind of, my merino wool base layer does most of the work. And then the workhorse, as far as below the waist, is the denim heavy duty pants. Now, they're not breathable. They do not dry quickly, but they are perfect for where, like through the brush and thorns that I walk through every day.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of people may have the impression that Dan Johnson's in Iowa, so he's hunting some kind of manicured ground or something like that. But man, you're doing a little brush busting when you get out there. You're not walking down carefully groomed access trails.
Yeah, I don't have the money for that kind of property property stuff that these guys are doing.
Yeah, man, I was looking at some properties in Iowa the other day, and I found a piece that you can buy for us here on the network that okay. we can all share and hunt. It was like 80 acres or something like that. So I figure me and you just get prime time, and the rest of the people can just come in for late season.
Yeah, 80 acres for what, like $1 million?
You know
what they're asking for?
Honestly, it was not in a prime part of Iowa. And I think it okay. was listed at $5,500 an acre. So okay. it was one of those.
That's cheap for these days.
Right. And it was one of those properties that you're like, okay, that could be a legitimate option at some point whenever Papa Dan buys us a piece. So
I just gotta start selling more advertising, man.
That's right. That's right. Just gotta get on it. Man, let's talk a little bit now about your mobile system. You've been mobile hunting for kind of a long time, at least before it was cool. I think we could say that. And I know you're a big fan of the Novix tree stands now that you're using. Yeah. But you've also kind of gotten into the saddle game a little bit. So walk me through some of that.
Yeah, I'm really excited this year to start hunting out of a saddle more. I mean, usually what happens is when I start seeing a trend, I don't follow it because, you know, it's just that, a trend. But talking to guys that I actually really respect, and not necessarily in the hunting industry, but more in the hunting community, who are very successful. They're not only successful, but they're the way they hunt is relatable to the way I hunt. And so when I hear guys like that talk about, you know, a saddle, I want to try a saddle. And so I have all the equipment this year. I tested it out for a handful of hunts last year, but this year I'm really looking forward to diving into it. I think last year I kept falling back to tree stands because I had everything set up from the previous year. This year I don't as much, other than so what I did is I took down some of my tree stands, but I left the sticks up. So I'm really looking forward to not only being mobile and not having to carry a full blown tree stand on my back, and just, you know, climbing up, leaning back, and getting ready to go. And I also think that for me, I am not an all-day sitter anyway. Like, I just cannot sit all day. And I think that a saddle is perfect for that. Like, it's perfect for the guy who only wants to go out and sit. You know, some guys will say that saddles are comfortable, but I got bad knees, I got a bad back. I personally don't know because I don't have the experience in sitting in a saddle for multiple, like, long periods of time. I think the most I sat in a saddle at one time was 3.5 hours, one day. And so, I mean, that in a period of a 4-day little trip I took to Southern Iowa, I hunted out of a saddle. I didn't kill anything, but I was just kind of bouncing around in one. And so it would be perfect for me, who I don't hunt all day. I hunt mornings, and then I hunt evenings, and then I'll move or I'll leave and then come back, or whatever the case may be, that's what I'm doing. And so I'm really looking forward to trying out, the tethered lockdown. It's got, it's the one with the pockets on the side of it.
Right.
And I think that's going to be perfect for me. So I don't have to attach anything else to the saddle. They're just kind of built in. And that's perfect for like my bow holders, my screw in steps, my screw in boat, like pack hangers and things like that. Anything that I'm going to screw into the tree or my grunt tube or things like that, that's going to be my go-to saddle for this year. And I think the only thing that I really have to figure out is layering in a saddle.
Right.
Like, that's the only thing I got to figure out is what do I need to do to be comfortable? And if it gets too cold, how do I add on a layer while I'm in a saddle without having to get down? How do I take a layer off if my, you know, am I just going to unzip and air out, or if I'm going to actually have to take an entire jacket off or whatever the case may be, I got to learn. I'm going to learn that. I'm going to mess around with that this year. And then hopefully by the end of this year, I will have figured out a system. And, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That tethered lockdown saddle, I got to put my hands on it and sit in one at ATA this year. And I think they're onto something with those zipper pockets, because the traditional dump style pouches on the side of a saddle that just kind of flop around all over the place, those, they've always kind of been the headache of saddle hunting for me, at least. Like I've been hunting out of a saddle, I think, since 2018, 2017, something like that. It was before Tethered came out and launched. And yeah, those dump pouches have been a pain ever since, but those sort of fixed position zipper pouches, I think, are going to kind of revolutionize that game. You mentioned there, you know, holding, you know, if you're bow holder and all that stuff getting stuck in there. So let's talk about your archery equipment now this year. Did you get a new bow this year, or did you stick with what you had?
I'm going to back up just a sec. I want to finish a point here.
Oh, yeah.
For my mobile setup though.
Sure.
The saddle is going to be the saddle. So the reason I like, okay, so I work with Tethered, right? And the reason I like working with Tethered is because they're not a brand that is like, you know, if you're going to be a mobile hunter, it has to be a saddle hunter. You right. have to be in a saddle, right? These guys, I like the way they do it, because they're saying our saddle is a tool for a mobile hunter's arsenal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so I really like that thought process, where it's not tree stands versus saddles. It's tools hunters can use. Right. So don't get me wrong. There's going to be a couple times where I'm going to be in a tree stand this year in like a historically good rut funnel, maybe a staging area, an area that I know throughout the years have produced. I'll be, you know, I got stands already in, I got like for my main farm, it's 480 acres and I have three tree stands already on it that I don't even take down anymore because they produce throughout the year at some point. Right. The rest, let's say if I catch a deer moving on the next ridge over, that's where the saddle comes into play. Right. Or if I need to bounce around and go look for something, that's where the saddle. When I go on my out-of-state trips, like I'm looking at Wisconsin and I'm looking at Minnesota this year, just because of how close they are. Cross the river, cross the border, hop in a tree. That is going to be my go-to. My saddle is going to be that. But after that, you know, it's like they have – like everything has a purpose. And so I feel like if I'm going to sit all day, like I said, I haven't done it yet and I don't like to do it, but if I'm going to, I feel like maybe a tree stand might be a little bit more comfortable for me as opposed to a saddle, but there's only one way to figure that out. And that's to spend more time in a saddle.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, for those who maybe don't know, I learned this year, Dan Johnson is a much bigger man than I knew him to be. when I got to actually sort of meet you in person there, it's like, okay, this is a tall dude, with broad shoulders. Yeah. Like that's a lot of man hanging in a saddle up there.
Yeah.
So, you know, comfort level wise, whether or not that's, where you want to be, and especially on a smaller saddle platform or something like that, you know, I can get the appeal to, you know, stick to some tree stands. One of the things that I've loved about saddle hunting is I feel the freedom when I'm in a saddle to get to where I need to be and decide, you know what, there's not a tree I want to be in. I really want to be in the ground, on the ground 30 yards away from the tree line. And I feel the freedom to do that. When I lug in a stand on my back, I feel the obligation, because I'm like, I drug all this crap in here. Like this thing needs to be, you know, in a tree. But if I've got a saddle on, I feel just as comfortable saying, you know what, there's not a tree that I want to get into. I think my shot opportunities are better if I'm on the ground. Then I can, I feel real comfortable just throwing my platform and sticks next to me and, you know, popping a squat while keeping my saddle on, as opposed to feeling like I need to get, you know, in a tree that's going to be less likely for the shot that I'm looking for.
Absolutely.
Are you ground hunting at all? Or are you kind of, you know, I mean, it's situational to where you hunt. And I know you hunt on the ground out west. But when you're there in Iowa, are you going to be sticking to trees? Or are you exploring the ground game?
Yeah, I this is the kind of hunter that I am. I will hunt wherever and whenever I need to, depending on what I see. So if I'm observing deer moving in a certain area, and I'll just use last year late season, for example. Last year late season, I caught a whole bunch of deer movement leading out of a block of timber into the neighbor's food source. There was no trees in between where they were bedding and for me to get in there. If I was to get in there, they would have seen me, spooked. So I looped back around this this big ridge that runs the length of the property, got into a fence row where I was like 5 yards off the fence line, and I cut a branch down on a pine tree and it sagged down, and I didn't cut it all the way off. I just cut it to where it would sag down to, right, onto the ground, and it, I created like a little blind out of that, and I gave myself shot opportunity. Shot opportunity there. So I am the kind of guy who I will go wherever and do whatever in order to get the job done. If that's in the tree, great. If that's from the ground, I'm not afraid to do it.
Right. Didn't you killed an archery buck 2 years ago from the ground. Am I right? Was that out west?
No, that was, I don't know if it was 2020. It's either 2020 or 2021. I can't remember. It was one of the COVID years. I shot a deer in South Dakota, a whitetail in South Dakota from the ground. I was sitting in a fence line. And then I also, that year, I think it was 2020. Yeah, it's 2020. I ended up going, I was walking to my tree stand, and there was a buck in this little ditch raking a tree. And so I shot him on the ground too, but I wasn't set up on the ground. I just was walking right to my tree stand. I saw him, and then I made a move on him, and then I shot him.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that story. Yeah. I think you did an episode on that one. That's a good one, man. You can't beat shooting a buck on your way to the right stand in an afternoon or something like that. But right, all right, let's talk archery for just a little bit. Yep. Did you get a new bow this year? Or are you sticking with the tried and true?
Yeah, I went 3 years ago. I got a Bowtech Solution, and I really like that bow. The thing that I really like about it is that I finally have a bow that fits my actual draw length. So for years, I shot a 29-inch draw, and I went to a bow shop, and I was asking this guy, hey, can I shoot? You know, let me shoot some bows. I'm looking for a new one. And he goes, what's your draw length? I said, 29. And he watched me, and he's like, dude, you're coming up short every time. You need a longer draw length. And so I went to a 30, and I felt way more comfortable. Like my back or my chest was way opened up, and I was feeling good at full draw. I felt like I wasn't trying to yank, like hold so hard. I was actually letting, now that I have a 30-inch draw, I'm letting the let off do a lot of the work.
Right.
Right. And so I moved to a 30, and I found I shot five or six brands, and ultimately chose the Bowtech Solution. And so I've shot it for the past 3 years now. And so this year, I said, do I want to buy a bow or do I want to get new strings? And so I got new strings, kept the same bow, and just had it run through. It took it to a bow shop, and they did the cam timing. They did, made sure that my peep sight was in the right spot and all that stuff. And so it shoots really, really well now. Nice. The only change that I've made in my setup is this year, it's kind of funny, this year I'm going to a thumb release as opposed to a wrist release.
Oh. Okay.
And the reason that I'm switching is because I can't find my wrist release. And I had a thumb release sitting on my filing cabinet over here. And so I was like, let's just give it a try. So I went in and then got my peep sight moved, my kisser button moved. And now I'm shooting really well at you know, up to 60 yards. And 60 yards is my max. I'm not trying to, you know, shoot 100 or anything like that. That's my max. That's kind of what I told myself. Hey, you know, even out west, like 60 yards, if you want the perfect bow hunting experience, 60 yards seems to be the max for me as far as yardage is concerned.
Right. Man, that releases can make so much of a difference. I've always shot cheaper end releases, right? And when I say cheaper end, I mean anything less than $100. I went into my local shop here last week, got my bow kind of worked on a bit. Previous guy that set up the bow, the bow tech walked me through a lot of things that were wrong on it, including, you know, spacers were, you know, missized. So they were actually different sizes from the top cam to the bottom cam, and there were all kinds of problems. But he had me shooting this release, and I was like, man, I really like that release. Can I buy one of these? He was like, yeah, sure. And he handed me a package with that release in it, and it was $450.
Jeez.
Dan Johnson, I didn't even know they made releases that were $450.
That's for sure.
Lee smokes. I mean, changed the game, and I walked out of there not buying that release because I value my life and my marriage. I just graduated from the time of like buying bows that were $450, you know,
much less
a release that was $450. And, they can definitely make a huge difference. Last thing I want to talk to you about just a little bit, is your broadhead selection. You know, there's been a lot going on in the last 3 or 4 years as far as broadheads go. I have shot all over the range, you know, as far as, you know, going for a big, huge mechanical, back down to a smaller mechanical, big, you know, 200 grain, 250 grain, even single bevels up front, coming back now to fix to expandable broadheads. Where have you landed specifically for whitetails? Because I feel like there's kind of a push even still out there that says you need to be shooting, you know, a 200 grain broadhead up front if you want to kill a whitetail.
Man, it's all about what you want to do. I wouldn't, like, a lot of guys are like, hey man, you gotta do what the ranch fairy's telling you, right? You gotta do that. You gotta do it. You gotta have 1,000 grains on the front or whatever, you know, you gotta have a 600 grain arrow. You gotta do it. You don't, right? However, I feel, and this is my opinion, that I am not a John Dudley. You know, I am not a Levi Morgan. I'm not a guy who can dissect a prop, like look at a problem, dissect it and say, your arrow setup and your broadhead setup is the reason that you didn't kill this deer. I can't do it, right? I don't have that kind of experience. But what I will say in my experiences, it's less about FOC and more about total arrow weight,
right?
Evenly distributed across the whole arrow. And so for me, I'm just saying for me that I would rather have an arrow. Like, so right now my total arrow weight is 524 total grains. And so that's pretty heavy compared to what I was shooting in like the low 400s. Okay. Cause I remember jumping up and then jumping up again. In a big way. And so when it comes to out west, let's say I'm going to go on an elk hunt. An elk is a bigger animal. You need to have more penetration, and I'm going to shoot a fixed blade broadhead in that scenario. I'm going to shoot a fixed blade broadhead, and I'm going to try to get as much penetration as I possibly can. And then when I go back to Iowa, I'm going to shoot that same setup because I don't want to change my, like, and retune a bow right before the season starts. I want everything ready. Usually, and right now, I'm going to be hunting mule deer, a smaller animal compared to an elk. And at 60 yards with, 400, 524 grains total arrow weight with a mechanical broadhead, I feel like I'm shooting a Wasp three blade jackhammer. And I forget if I'm shooting 120 or 125. I can't remember. But either way, I'm shooting a mechanical that obviously has energy loss when it expands in the cavity, but I may not get a pass through at 60 yards out west, but I know for a fact if it's inside 30 yards and I hit him in the ribs, or I hit him in, you know, the lungs, heart, even through the guts, I'm getting a tremendous wound channel and more than likely going to be getting a pass through with that arrow weight at my draw and at that distance. Because when I'm hunting Iowa, I don't even give myself an opportunity at a 40 yard shot. I'm in so tight. It's usually a 30 or under. Very rarely is it even 30. I'd say most of my shots are 20 or in.
Right. Right. I'm in a very similar boat as you. I think my total arrow weight this year is like 516 grains or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, which puts me where I want to be as far as a little bit of higher FOC, but not ungodly. I'm at like 16 or 17% FOC or something like that. You know, I'm not getting up into the 19, 20, 21% FOC. But
what broadhead are you using?
So I've got what I've been using. I used it last year and was very, very happy with the Grim Reaper broadheads.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very happy.
Those do damage.
Man, yeah. They do damage, and they're tough. They're just, as far as, you know, expandable heads go, they're tough heads. You get them back, the blades aren't all bent up and that kind of thing, which I've experienced with some other other broadhead brands. Let's say that. Yep. I've also got some single bevels and some double bevels from VPA this year that I'm trying out. They shoot really, really well. Getting them, you know, sharp for the season, we'll see how that goes. I hate sharpening broadheads. Like, that's one of the reasons I keep coming back.
I don't do it.
It's a pain. Dude, it's such a pain. It's such a pain. I want them to come out of the box just razor, hair popping sharp, and be able to go from there rather than feeling like I needed to doctor them up a lot. You know, if I don't have a ton of time to hunt, you better believe I don't have a ton of time to sit around and sharpen broadheads at night, you know, when I could be doing something else. So
yeah, I treat broadheads as a disposable product, pretty much.
Right.
I'm using them once. If it's a clean pat, let's just say this. If I shoot a buck and I toast him and it goes through soft tissue, like maybe it hits a rib, but it hits lung tissue or a heart and it passes through, I'll look at it. I might clean it up. I might keep it on. And if I'm going after a doe, then next I know I'm going to have a 20 yard shot, I'm keeping that same broadhead on. I'll just use it again. I'm not going to try to resharpen it. I'll just use it again.
Right.
And at that distance, the blade can be dull, but it's still doing, I mean, it's still going to do a ton of damage. And if the product is made good enough, it shouldn't need to be sharpened after it goes through just one animal.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree, man. Cause that's, yeah, I can't get on the bandwagon of wanting to sharpen them. I mean, a lot of guys talk about touching up their broadheads every time they go out, you know, whether they shot something or not. It's like, I'm glad you had time for that. Like, I barely had time to eat breakfast, you know, this morning. so I don't know that I'm going to do that whole game. But, well, Dan, man, we got a lot of cool stuff going on the network. Why don't, before we hop off here, you kind of just give us a quick rundown of what's going on with Sportsman's Empire this time of year and what folks can expect.
Man, I'm not going to sit here and waste people's time. All I'm going to do is just say, hey, listen, you got to go check out the Sportsman's Empire and our lineup of podcasts. It is, and I'm obviously I'm biased here, but I will put the content that the network puts out, the Sportsman's Empire puts out, I will put it up against any podcast in the outdoor industry or in the outdoor space. That's how confident I am that you will be not only entertained, but educated on the content. And it's just fun. man, we got a group of hosts that are just studs. And I really like the lineup that we have. On top of that, we got a little bit of a rebrand going, because although this is the Wisconsin Sportsman, you live in Georgia,
right?
And there's some cool things that are going to be happening there.
Yeah, we've got some exciting things coming down the pipe. We're going to be adding a co-host here pretty soon. I think a name that folks will recognize and be aware of already. So that's good. It's going to be a flawless transition there. And then we're gonna pop up some new content where I can kind of focus a little bit more here in the South. I mean, I've made, since I've been in Wisconsin, four or five trips back, and to keep the content relevant on the ground there. But eventually, man, those 15-hour drives get a little daunting. So, we've got some big changes coming up. How about old Mitch from PA coming on strong with Pennsylvania Woodsman? He's been
killing it.
Absolutely killing it. Yeah, doing a fantastic job. So. Folks, if you are not subscribed already to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, you need to go check it out. Got a lot of good shows, including this one, How to Hunt Deer. We got Nine Finger Chronicles, Hunting Gear Podcast. We've got guys from Missouri, Oklahoma, Michigan. Wherever you are, there's relevant content for you. So, Dan, I appreciate you coming on the show today, man. And, hey, good luck this season.
Hey, same to you, man. I look forward to talking with you and giving you an update.
That's all for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you dig this show, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you get your podcasts. While you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would very much appreciate that. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram at the Wisconsin Sportsman or at How to Hunt Deer. That's also the best way to get a hold of me, suggest topics, guests, or questions that you'd like me to explore on the show. Big thanks to our partners, Tacticam, Huntworth, and OnX. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more great outdoor content, check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find my other podcast, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, as well as a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.